The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
On News Talk.
Hello, and you're very welcome along to the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan, your host, and coming up this episode, smaller houses are more affordable, but when is small too small? We're going to ask the owner of a really tiny home. Taking a life-size tour of your new house before it's even been built, we look at the tech that helps us do that, the new mortgage providers offering home loans up to the age of 80, and Jennifer Sheehan on sprucing up your mobile home or caravan for summer. If you'd like to get involved in our podcast, we love to hear from listeners. So you can find us on email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, and you can find me on socials at SineadRyan100. And of course, if you miss any of the items or you want to listen back, you can do that on this pod, wherever you get your podcast from, and then primarily on newstalk.com and on the Newstalk app. Now, it is, you wouldn't know it from the weather, but it is, we are told, holiday time. And thankfully, or regretfully, I took mine early. So sadly, that means I'm all done for the summer. I've no plans to go anywhere else. But with all of the problems at Aer Lingus, you can be virtually certain there'll be other strikes this year, from French air traffic controllers to other airlines. There is a strong case to be made for the old staycation, or at least being able to control how you get to your destination and your accommodation when you get there. And for that reason, caravan and mobile homes have always been very popular, and even more so since the COVID years. So if you're lucky enough to own one, do stay tuned, because we will be talking interiors, mobile interiors at that, a little bit later. And if you do own a mobile home or a caravan, get in touch with us. Where are you going this year? Are you using it this summer? What do you do when it's raining? And is it the free and easy holiday that people say it is? I have done the whole mobile thing over the years when my kids were small, like many people, but I don't own one. So I've always kind of headed away to one. So do let us know. I'd be interested to hear. And maybe that is the holiday that you don't have to worry about what's going on in any airport in the world. You're very welcome along to the Home Show. Now, the housing crisis has put in place all sorts of constraints in relation to what the average person can or cannot afford. I mean, for most people, they may need to compromise on size, for example, going for something a little bit smaller than maybe they had hoped for. But how small is too small? Well, Emma O'Hagan is an outdoor adventure host and a tiny homeowner. The home is tiny, not her. She joins me now. Emma, you're very welcome along to the News Talk studio.
Thanks so much for having me.
I read your story in the Irish Indo during the week, and I thought it was fascinating, along with the pictures. This is a very small house. Tell listeners how small it is. Describe it to us.
Yeah, so it's 25 square metres. It is small. It's sort of an open plan space. It has a little living room. We have a small kitchen. We have a small toilet, surprisingly, and then we have a loft bed, which is where we actually sleep. So I suppose you could consider it a really standard size apartment if you took out the whole bedroom space. So rather than a bedroom, we just have sort of a loft space. So it's literally just a mattress upstairs. And that's how small it is. It's 25 square meters.
25 square meters. So that, I mean, I suppose you could find a studio apartment that size, and they can be very well designed and fit everything in it. What is it like for you living in that space?
Well, that's exactly, I suppose, what made us think we could live this way. We did actually stay in an apartment, a studio apartment in Austria during a ski season there for 2 years. And it was small, but we managed like without any struggles. And we had actually been living in a camper van for 2 years also. We were traveling around Europe and living in a camper van full time. So that's kind of why we said, well, even if it is 25 square meters, which is small by all accounts, and maybe for a lot of people too small, we felt like it was going to be enough space for us. So that's why we went with this option.
Okay. So you knew from the camper van that anything other than that was probably going to be a bit more spacious anyway. So you weren't driving each other mad, because exactly. you have a partner. So there's two of you involved, and you could probably live together in a confined space.
Well, that's true. Yeah, we had it trialed and tested, and we survived our 2 years of traveling in a camper van together. And I suppose we both agreed that when you can survive that, I mean, you can get through anything.
All right.
So this is definitely a step up in terms of size for us.
Now, of course, there aren't many tiny home options in Ireland. There aren't estates of tiny homes of 25 square metres. So how did it come about?
So we initially were looking at converting a shipping container, and we had looked at a couple of different shipping containers. The problem with them was they were quite narrow, so we were going to need more than one if we were going to try and make it into a fully livable space. So then we just happened upon this company in Dublin. They're in Dublin now. They were in Meath when we found them. They were called the Mobile Pods, and they were selling their prototype online on Facebook Marketplace for what we thought was a very good price. It was up for 15,000. And when we had considered the price of the shipping containers, insulation, and putting in windows, and also our time, we just moved back to Ireland and we were living in two different places and also working full time. We figured that it was a much, I suppose, more cost-effective and time-effective move for us to buy the pod as it was already made. So that's how we ended up with the pod.
Well, I've heard about pretty much everything being sold and bought on Facebook Marketplace, but I've never heard of anybody buying a house on it. So that is definitely a first. So 15,000. And what was your budget then to do it up? Because presumably it needed work.
Yeah, so I think we had originally agreed, we thought if we could get it all done under 30,000, we were going to be doing pretty well. And sure, we all know the price of materials has gone up, and things are expensive. Materials are expensive. So that was our initial budget. And I suppose from getting the pod, that was really just the start of it. And I suppose it is also worth noting that we didn't have to buy a plot of land. We're obviously very fortunate in that regard. My dad had a little plot of land near where my home house is. And so that's I suppose, a really, really helpful side of the story.
But there's still work to do because, I mean, presumably you need water, you need electricity, you know, you need to have facilities for wastewater. So tell me how that came about.
Yeah, that is, I suppose, the most challenging part. And as I said, the pod was completely empty when we got it. So we started off by putting in some windows. There was a couple of windows there, but the light wasn't great inside. So again, that was Facebook Marketplace. I put in a few windows with Kevin, and then we insulated it. And then we cladded the whole internal walls and everything. We actually used, I've done a couple of videos on it, but we used an old Japanese method of treating timber. So we burnt standard TNG, like tongue and groove wooden panels. So we burnt those timber panels and we've used that as our ceiling, and that has a natural way of protecting the wood from woodworm and from rot, and it's also moisture resistant. But that was just the surface level stuff. We then had to sort out electricity, as you said, and water. So we also had rang quite a few companies around Ireland. Very few of them were willing to support us in getting an off-grid setup, and that was really important to us. A lot of them were happy to supply us with solar panels but wanted us to be hooked up to the grid, I suppose, for backup. So we managed to find a company, surprisingly, in Leitrim, Euromotive Group. They're in Carrick and Shannon. And they were the only company in Ireland that we could find that would supply us with this fully off-grid setup. And they specialize in boats and like outdoorsy kind of things. So they were really keen to get involved in the project. So they worked with us over a few months and we found the right solutions. We've got like these really flexy light solar panels on the roof. So it's not weighing down the roof. As we might have said earlier, that it's a timber structure. So we didn't want anything too heavy on the roof. Then we're also collecting rainwater, that has to be filtered then through a charcoal system, charcoal sand, and we also have a UV system as well for the water. And then we also have a shallow well that'll back up the water supply. Now, we've never needed it. We seem to have plenty of water. As you know, there's been plenty of rain. So
indeed,
as long as we've got rain, we're fine for water. So I feel fairly safe in that department. And then the final other thing was the eco dry toilet. So we didn't want to go for a chemical toilet. We didn't want to go for a septic tank. This is something, I suppose, that's movable. It's a temporary structure. So we went for an eco dry toilet, and it's a compost toilet that separates the ones from twos, for want of a better description. And the compost is out on the land then and fertilizing the trees. So
right. Okay. So that's very circular then, what you're describing. Now, you said it's not a permanent structure, and I know that's important, not least for planning issues and all that kind of thing. Does it mean you could move it if you wanted to?
Yeah, we literally could. And I suppose that was the reason why we really didn't mind investing in this as source of a property of sorts, because it literally is something that you can pick up and move. We would have to disconnect from the toilet, the compost toilet, and we would have to disconnect from the well, but that's it. It's completely movable, straight onto a trailer the same way that it arrived. We could move it in the morning, and I think that's why we thought, we sort of calculated the risks. And I suppose with the investment being so little, it was, you know, we came in under budget, which is so unusual, especially in today's climate. But, you know, we spent 26 grand on it, and we figured that after 3 years, we'd have paid it will have paid itself off, especially if we had to have been paying for rent or having a mortgage. So, and then, you know, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, 5 years, whenever, you can always sell this. And I think that, as I said, that was kind of another reason why we ended up going this way.
That's the plan for it. And tell me, do you hanker after, you know, you haven't had a winter here yet. So do you hanker maybe after a warm and cozy house, or will you wait and see?
Do you know, I think this place is so cozy. We did actually, so we were working on it over the winter time. So we would have been here pretty much every night over the winter time, and we'd have the stove lit, and this place is so cozy. After 5 minutes of lighting the fire, like, we would have this place warm. And then we're also, I suppose, the next project is to convert an old horse box into a sauna. So we'll have that out the back, and we'll have a little hot tub. So I honestly think wintertime is going to be cozy here. And look, if we're hankering for a nice big house, I can always go running back to mum and dad.
Mammy. All right. And tell me now, Emma, when it comes to kind of being in the same space, you know, things can get a little bit fractious, but it sounds to me now you have it nailed and it's all done. How much, is there anything left to do, or are you very happy with the way it is? Or are there any tweaks you want to add? And you won't kind of get into a zone of needing an extension or anything else, will you?
Well, I'd never say never, but for the moment, we just want to finish this to the, you know, to a final standard, I suppose. We still have a wee bit to do in the bathroom. I just was tiling during the week with Kevin there in the shower. And so we just have a small wee bit to do there in the bathroom to finalize, I suppose, the finishing touches there. Bit of work to be done on that. Who knows, maybe another extension. The dream for me would be to convert a shipping container, or maybe a small old cottage at some stage. I just love these sort of projects. So definitely wouldn't say it's that I'm done with projects.
And what would you recommend to other people who are thinking, gosh, I've been saving my house deposit for I don't know how long now. I have that amount of money. I could do this. What would you say to them?
I would say, you know, if you're prepared to make the lifestyle choice and to compromise a little bit and to be a bit more economically friendly in your life, I would say do it. I mean, it's not easy. And like, if you talk to someone like me, or you listen to someone like me, you might just listen and be like, oh my God, I'm sold. There's definitely hard, challenging parts. You know, we did all the work ourselves. We could have had this done sooner if we could afford to pay for someone to come in and do it, but part of the fun was doing the project ourselves. So if you're the kind of person to get stuck down and just try it and give it a go and, you know, learn new skills and you're good at problem solving, just go for it. I mean, I think we just spend a lot of time thinking and talking about what we can do, but, you know, so at some point you have to make the leap. And I would say if you have the money, go for it. Why not?
A life lesson for us all in a lot of ways. Emma O'Hagan, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on your very, very tiny but beautiful home. And you have an Instagram site, Emma's Footprints, isn't that right?
Yeah, thanks so much. So yeah, it's Emma's and then _ footprints. I have loads of videos of the build and how to do it, and I get loads of messages, and I'm always happy to help anybody along their journey. Bear with me though, because I've had a couple over the last few days. It's been a bit busy, but I'd love to hear from more people that are interested.
All right. Well, listen, you can check out Emma's house and all her renovations there, and long life to you in it, Emma. And I hope it all goes well for you. And thanks for joining us on The Home Show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now, for all of us non-architects out there, it can often be quite difficult to translate floor plans into a visualization of what our house or extension will actually look like. But what if you could walk through those plans in full size before your project even starts? Well, John Foley and Emma O'Donoghue are the husband and wife team behind Life Size Plans Leinster and join me now. Folks, you're very welcome to the studio.
Thanks so much today. Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
When I heard about this, because I heard about it as part of one of the trade shows that you had been at, could have been Ideal Homes or one of those. Mm. And it struck me that this was most likely going to be a virtual reality headset, you know,
like loads
the gamers use. And the thoughts were making me dizzy already. I had visions of banging into doors and, you know, walking around and crashing into things. That's not it at all. So for the benefit of the spatially challenged among us, which is me, and any of our listeners, describe to us what it is that your product does. Emma.
So I guess what we allow people to do is to physically walk through it. So we have a showroom and we have projectors mounted to the ceiling and we scale up the drawings to the size they're going to be. So people can physically come in. We've got a viewing deck that they come in, start from the top and get an overview of their house. And then we go down to the front door and walk through it. We bring in walls, we bring in furniture, and we have it all dressed out before the client arrives. But they're all movable. So if they come in and they feel, I'd love to move my door this way, or I'd like the room a little bit bigger or smaller, we can move the furniture while they're within the space so they can see the effect that would have. And it's kind of like test driving your car. It's like doing that for your house and just making sure that you're happy with the space. But it's a physical space. There is no goggles. It is a big warehouse for all effects and purposes that we have dressed up very nicely and we have it decorated out as the house.
So it's not really, you don't have to use your imagination.
No.
And it's not kind of like CGI appearing in front of you. This is a very physical space that you are literally walking through. So, John, is it fair to say that it's a kind of, you know, Emma described it well there, but I'm looking at it as a kind of maybe a cinema screen on the floor. Would that be the easiest way to represent it?
What we have is a projection system that's mapped out in a industrial unit. The unit itself is 6,000 square foot. So as you can imagine, for the typical home that people are building in Ireland, we can project up to about 95% of the homes that people are building in one single projection, enabling them to physically walk through it. Now, in addition to that, we've got a projection wall, which will project the elevations and the sections of the house to enable people to really get a sense of the size and the scale of the entrance of their home, the window sizes, and the relationship between those windows and the actual rooms with which they're walking through.
And as you said, you're literally taking Maria made up furniture and walls, like a bed and a chair and
kitchen units,
and just moving them around. So if people look at it and they say, now hold on a second, our kitchen island was supposed to be there, but now that I'm in the space, I'm going to keep banging my shin off it. And is that the kind of thing that happens?
We kind of get people to, we ask them how they live when they're in the space. So, you know, if people have gone for a big open plan living kitchen, we get them to stand either side and say, that's how far you're shouting for your cup of tea or your glass of wine. where do you want to cook? Do you want to face people when you're cooking? Do you want to be, have your preparation space looking out at the rest of your kitchen? So we really get them to live in the space. And then if they don't like it, because it's on wheels, we can turn it around. So flip the island around. How does that feel? Do you have a bigger walkway between that and your dining space? Is that what you want? Do you want it a little bit longer? So we've got different shapes and sizes in the islands as well. So that we can see, can the room hold a little bit longer?
And I suppose people would say, well, look, that's what architects are for. They've designed this house for me. They should know where the flow is, the corners, the table that shouldn't be where it is, or all this kind of thing. But actually, do you find then that ordinary people who maybe, speaking for a friend, can't interpret that off a map, actually are helped then by physically walking through the property and seeing it like that?
Absolutely. And you mentioned CGIs earlier. So this is just another option for people rather than CGIs or virtual reality. This is another option to help people visualise.
Yeah.
And before they make the huge investment, that they know what they're getting.
Mm.
And we found people want to be more and more informed lately.
Mm.
And this is just giving them that opportunity. And we always say to people to bring their architect or bring their builder along. We only do one session at a time.
Mm.
So this is very much an inclusive session.
Okay. That, right.
And if the architect is there, we stand back and we're just there to operate the tech behind it.
And what does it all cost then to do that? Because presumably in advance you're going to need the plans, you're going to need all the stuff that they have, and you then have to go to all the effort of projecting it and doing all that.
Absolutely. So before any session, we always have about an hour set up. That's scaling the drawings and dressing out the house entirety. So we've been very transparent with our pricing strategy. So what we do is we price by size. So if it's a house up to, say, 2,000 square foot, people can come in and walk through their home for up to €700 plus VAT. So it's an excellent opportunity for people to be able to experience their home before commencing construction on site. My background is from the industry. I've worked in the industry for over 20 years. And one of the commonalities that I've experienced is people making changes on site. And that has an implication. One is cost and one is time. And over the course of a project, the more changes that you make during the construction process, the more costly it's going to be onto the project
budget. Of course, because if you've built a wall and then you've to say, by the way, now it's in the wrong place, can you take it down again? That's absolutely going to cost you a fortune, isn't it?
And stress.
Our approach is, if you're spending upwards of $200,000-$300,000, whether it's your dream extension or you're going and building a home, you deserve to get it right first time.
Now, I suspect that it also has commercial applications, because you're going to have maybe restaurants or pub spaces or other commercial buildings who could possibly benefit then.
Absolutely.
From the same thing.
Yeah, we've had hospitals through that they've brought the end user through, so they've got to experience and give their feedback for that to be incorporated into the design. We've had restaurants through.
We've seen, it was very interesting actually with the hospital we had. There was like over 40
stakeholders
involved, and each stakeholder broke up into their individual groups with the architects, and everyone was able to feedback their own individual comments on the design, and then for the designers to be able to incorporate that into the finished design. And then from the like of the restaurant, we've seen the owner of the restaurant and the head chef come in and physically stand in the kitchen space and
go cook a pretend dinner and walk through with pretend plates and then swing around and go in a door and out a door and check.
We had guys in who were doing a forecourt for a garage.
Yeah.
And honestly, the psychology that goes into the layout of them, was phenomenal.
They want you buying all the sweets and the bottle of wine and the bottle of Calpol and everything.
The things you're going to buy, that can be right at the back to get you through everything. But it was amazing to see that. So it has an awful lot of applications.
When you see people using this then, how many of them, having done this, change something about what they had planned?
Residential. Everybody. We've all the markups, everybody, whether it's door swings.
Do you mean 100% people make
a
change?
We've had nobody through who hasn't made a change.
Right.
Nobody.
Okay. Where did you get the idea from?
Where every good idea comes from, our own problem. We were going to do a job on our own house and I couldn't visualise it because I'm not from the industry. So John had done the drawing himself.
Are you saying now, Emma, here's what I'm hearing, that you've a girl brain and I've a girl brain and we can't do that math?
Absolutely. Okay. So I fully understand people coming through.
That's
and people are nearly embarrassed to say that they can't visualise, but it is such a thing for so many people. So I couldn't visualise what we were doing at home. John went to look for something. We found these guys in Australia and they were doing a rollout of a franchise. So we took a leap and we brought it to Ireland. And we took the leap together. John was going to be hiring in somebody anyway. So we thought we'd do it as a gruesome twosome.
What is funny is we've a new business, but we still don't have a new kitchen.
Lots of inspo though.
Right.
Lots
so
of inspiration.
Something got put, in the back burner, I'm hearing for
I
this.
See, but at least 5 to 10 years.
It's true though, you can visualise your kitchen now. You just don't have it in reality. Isn't that it?
That's okay. It.
All right.
We did put the design down and I didn't like it from John.
I'm always interested when I interview couples on the show because we interview lots of small businesses and people who work in SMEs with ideas on housing and interiors, how you work together. So, you know, do you live together, you work together. It can be a challenge. Have you always done that?
I would say Emma's the best boss I've ever had.
Absolutely, it has been a challenge because you're together all of the time and we've never seen each other's work side. But we've survived year one.
Right.
And we're really enjoying it. And it's nice to have the highs and it's also nice to have someone who understands when you're having a low, what that's like. And, you know, they fully understand it and are in it with you.
And leave you alone and go out and get your coffee and a bun.
Right.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Listen, thanks a million, folks. Where can people see this warehouse or find out more about it?
They can visit our website, which is lifesizeplansleinster.com, or they can visit our Instagram page, which is lifesizeplansleinster.
Fantastic. All right. Well, John Foley, Emma Donoghue, continued success. Hope it all goes well for you. And I hope you get your kitchen.
Thank you
very
much.
Thanks so much, Sinead. Very good.
Now, the mortgage market has been shaken up recently with the arrival of some new entrants into the market and in particular, home loans aimed at the older buyer. Here to tell us more is Martina Hennessy, MD of Doddle.ie. Martina, you're very welcome back
to the home show.
Thank you. First, let's talk about who these new lenders are, because I know most of us will be familiar with AIB and Bank of Ireland and PTSB. MoCo?
Yeah, the two new lenders are
the ICS.
Strange names.
Yeah,
MoCo and Nua Money. And both of them really have started, came to market, MoCo earlier this year. And at the moment, Nua Money are in a kind of a pilot launch phase. And so they're non-bank lenders. They are owned MoCo by BAWAG, which is an Austrian bank. And then Nua Money is a fund that's put in place and they're backed by a financial institution, a large financial institution who's funding their money to lend in the Irish market. So both see a huge opportunity in the Irish market, although they're fully cognizant of the larger players who have a great monopoly in the Irish market. Mm. The best thing for consumers is more lenders, more choice. But what we have to look at is the rates that these lenders can offer.
Mm.
And at the moment, those rates are higher because they're fully dependent on money markets. But so these lenders are coming to market with different offerings. They're trying to be challengers to the main lenders. They're looking at niches within the market that they can maybe serve.
Mm. Now, I suppose a lot of these new lenders, because you've called them non-bank lenders. And the key is they don't have a whole branch network. They don't have thousands of staff to pay, but they also don't have deposits that they can draw on or get their money from the European Central Bank. So there's a bit of agility there, but also it can be more, they can be more, let's say, reactive to rate changes and maybe a little bit more volatile in terms of that.
Yep. And so we saw that right in the early days of 2022 when funding costs increased. We saw the non-bank lenders increase their rates far in advance of the bank lenders. The bank lenders had poor deposit holders' funds on account that they were not giving a return to. So they could kind of, I suppose, have a weighted average cost of lending where it was lower. They hadn't. Mm. They had all these funds on deposit, which they were giving a really poor return to. So they weren't as exposed to the money markets. Where non-bank lenders, as you say, they don't have deposits. They are pure mortgage lenders. They don't have deposits and have investments. They're not a retail bank. So they rely purely on the money markets. And when money market increases, they have an immediate impact on non-bank lenders' funding.
And I suppose then the other reason maybe people mightn't have heard of them is because they don't have branches and they don't sell directly to the public like the regular banks do. They are all through brokers. So I suppose if you're using mortgage broker, you get maybe the advice on that and what's available. And if you're not, you may not have heard of them at all. But they are here and they are offering business. Now, let's talk a little bit about the older people, pensioner mortgages. Now, I am from an era when I worked in mortgages and I worked in this area that was a no-no, because nobody really wants a pensioner on a fixed income, usually maybe a low pension, and taking money off them or running the risk of having to chuck them out of their houses if the whole thing goes pear-shaped. So credit lines to older people have always been hard to come by for that very reason. Tell us what's new.
Well, I suppose, as you say, it's really, really challenging for a bank when they're looking at somebody on a fixed income to see how they can afford to service a credit line such as a mortgage into retirement. So what has happened with the non-bank lenders who have come to market? So the new lenders, NUA and MoCo in particular, and also ICS, who've returned to the market after hiatus due to really high rates over the last 2 years. What they're looking at is they're looking at lending into retirement, but they're looking at it in very specific cases. So they're saying, we will extend a mortgage to somebody a 35-year term max, but right up to age 80 at expiry.
So the mortgage isn't for the 80-year-old to apply to. It's somebody, you're talking about somebody maybe in their 50s.
Absolutely. Okay. And we know people are buying homes later. We know that people are looking to have more affordability when they're looking for mortgages, but also from a cash flow point of view, looking to keep their mortgage repayments as low as they can. Now, these products and lending into retirement will only be available if you can clearly demonstrate that you have a strong source of income into retirement post-normal retirement age. The other banks in Ireland and all the pillar banks will restrict lending to age at expiry at 70 or in some cases to 65 unless you can show that you have a strong pension. Mm. So it is offering choice. It is a niche offering. I don't expect and would hope that people won't.
You're not going to have pensioners banging down your door at Donald.
It's very specific.
Yeah.
There's other finance and again, we will have had lifetime loans in Ireland, which is a different kind of proposition.
That's a different product.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So will this be welcomed? Like, are there people, and I'm thinking particularly of a market, I mean, I know it's getting harder and harder to be a first time buyer now and later in age, but the chances are most people still do it by the age of 50. I'm thinking the market for this, Martina, might be people who are maybe divorced or separated and starting again and may not have the money to kind of say, well, look, I can just take out a mortgage for 15 years or 10 years but they may not be able to afford that. Is that what that market is, do you think?
Yeah, and again, it's a niche market, but certainly for people who are changing family circumstances, divorce rates have risen between the last census and now. Mm. So you have people who are coming and who are saying, okay, a 14-year term is just not affordable for me, because the shorter the term, the less you can borrow because your affordability is stretched. But also from a cash flow point of view, it is more difficult to repay a mortgage over a shorter term, particularly if you have a situation where there's maintenance amounts due. But also I would say that some people prioritise investment over mortgage repayments or accelerating their mortgage repayments. So they may feel that they can get a better return on their money by investing it elsewhere. You also have applicants who are buying at different age brackets. So you might have somebody who's a decade older than another party, and it's always the age of the elder applicant when it comes to mortgages. So that restriction
Could
be difficult.
Yeah, the age gap.
Exactly.
In a marriage.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So from that perspective then, like, the state is also buying into this in some way, because they now allow people to borrow a little bit more, like as if they were a first-time buyer under the Fresh Start. So your loan-to-income ratio is
four times
your income. If you can show that you are divorced, you have no other interest in a house, and you're starting again, as it were.
Exactly. So it's called a fresh start principle, where if you are in that position where you've left the family home and you're looking to start again, they will allow you to borrow as if a first time buyer. So that four times income multiple. But also you're eligible for the first home scheme under where you can bridge the gap between the amount you can borrow and the amount you need to purchase a home, where it's a new built home.
That's the shared equity thing.
Exactly. So that's, strictly speaking, it's for first home or first time buyers, but the fresh principle allows second time buyers to actually partake in that if they've left the family home.
Okay. And can you see now, so we have MoCo, we have ICS doing this. Can you see the pillar banks taking up this offer, or will they stay away from it, do you think?
You know what? They have never gone there. You know, the max age that to expiry is 70 years, and all banks are always looking at what is possible to repay. Mm. They don't want to get in into repayment post-retirement. Mm. And the majority of the market don't necessarily want to borrow up to the age of 80. So I think it is going to be a niche product. Again, it's great to have the choice there. It's great to have that flexibility for a cohort of customers who might need it, or homeowners or mortgage consumers who might need it. But it's certainly, I don't see it going mainstream.
Okay, all right. Now, while I have you, we just found out this week, although I don't think it's a very, very well-kept secret, that Revolut has indicated that it's going to start offering mortgages in the future in Ireland. Now, you know, with 2 million accounts here, I suppose that's how they're going to make their money, you know. It's not just offering the kind of the cool sharing and the app and all that, because banks make the most money by lending it out. Do you think that'll be a welcome development? I mean, they don't have branches. They're not going to do it through brokers. How is that going to work, do you think?
I think if anybody can do it, Revolut can do it, right? That's the big thing. Their digital proposition is what, I suppose, the new mortgage customer wants, really. First-time buyers, that's how they transact. We find that in our own business. And again, you know, our Revolut will always lead with the digital proposition. But what I suppose we all need to be mindful of is behind, you know, buying a credit card, getting a consumer loan, it's a relatively minor transaction, really, you know, in terms of how difficult it can be. Whereas a mortgage is a much more lengthy transaction. It is a much larger transaction. For most people, it will be the largest transaction they ever carry out, their first mortgage in particular. So I think that while Revolut will absolutely make things simpler from a digital perspective, the advice piece is something that is going to be really difficult for them to crack. You need to talk to a human in a lot of cases. In most cases, we like to be able to have something explained to us. And while we can read and listen and watch videos, there's nothing like that human engagement. And I know from working in mortgages 20 years,
an app chat bot doesn't
It doesn't do it. Okay. And everybody's circumstances are different. And that's the piece they'll have to be mindful of. They will be able to deliver excellent customer service through the digital experience, but it has to come down to also giving that right advice.
All right. So time will tell. I mean, I don't doubt for a second they're going to give it a go.
Yeah.
And if people want their mortgage from a bank based in Lithuania, there's nothing stopping them. And, you know, we'll see where that takes us.
Competition is good.
Watch this space, indeed. All right. Martina, where can people find out more now about your mortgages in general, but also these mortgages for older people?
Yep. So I would say if you work with a broker, most of these products are you know, brokerage through brokerages, taken through brokerages. So we have a brokerage, Doddle, and also there's many brokers in the Irish market. So brokers offer market-based advice. They can give you a full suite and range of products and should be giving you the advice you need. But with any of these products, including lifetime loans and lending into retirement, it's so important that you really consider them. You really look at the legal side of it and ensure you can commit to what's been proposed.
All right. Well, Martina Hennessy of Doddle.ie, thanks very much for giving us all of that sage advice. Sage advice for the wise borrower. And thanks a million for coming in to the Home Show. I am delighted to welcome back to studio, and we haven't seen her in a while, Jennifer Sheehan, former Home of the Year winner, and delighted to see you back. She's here to put the cool in your caravan and the magnificent into your mobile home. Jenny, welcome to studio. Now, remind us first about, because you are the owner of a holiday home on wheels.
I am.
Remind us about.
Very on brand, the tiniest little holiday home you've ever seen. So, listener, if you haven't heard us talk about this before, you can check out more of my Instagram at Workers Cottage. It is a converted minivan. So I got an old seven-seater, not old, I got a second-hand seven-seater, you know, soccer mom or soccer dad car, and got it converted by a fabulous company up in Leitrim, they were, at Pathfinders, into a little camper van, mini camper van.
And it is very little. Little has kind of been the theme of our show this week, because we were speaking earlier about tiny homes and little homes, and talking to Emma O'Hagan, who has this tiny, tiny, little home. And here are you with both your little house and your little camper van. Yeah. But you did go to a lot of trouble to convert it and decorate it.
Yeah, and there was obviously constraints. Same with my little home, which you'll have heard about with Emma's home as well, because my street is tiny. It's this little old, you know, 1800 street of little, tiny little Dublin cottages. And so while I'd love a big camper van that I can move around in and, you know, that I wouldn't have to shower outside of, which I'm sure everybody else would be grateful for as well, I had to be able to put it into a car that would be able to fit on my street. And I wasn't able to have a second car because I don't have enough parking. And so with those constraints in mind, I now have this little tiny little van.
So from the outside, it looks like it is a regular car.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a van.
No.
You've just stripped out the inside.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So we thought we'd then ask you, for people who have that or have mobile homes or caravans who holiday that way. And I know, listen, they are like a new mobile home or caravan. They are so brilliantly equipped and designed.
Yeah.
Cubby holes and storage and beds and sofas turning into tables and all that. But you're going to talk to us about the aesthetic element, yeah. the bits you can do yourself, the bits that turn it from, you know, interesting and compact into wow, stylish.
Yeah.
Okay, so give us an idea of, I suppose, let's start first of all, what can you expect to pay?
Now, if you're talking about the ones that you just spoke about, I mean, you could be upwards of 100 grand. Now, in an Irish housing crisis, that's not a bad
to live in. Oh, right, okay.
Right?
I'm kind of a non-mobile. Mobile home gal.
You're a home,
up on
a
bricks
home
in a French campsite.
And that's the other thing, because there's layers of cost involved in owning a mobile home, right? It's not this dream of, you know, you can get secondhand ones, you can get lower cost ones, upwards of 10 to 15 grand. You could potentially, you know, nab yourself a real bargain. Okay. Just make sure that what you're buying is up to spec and has been signed off.
Yeah.
The newer ones, I mean, they're so well made, as you said. They're designed brilliantly, they're exceptionally well energy rated, they have all the mod cons, like they're really, really good. But you also have to buy a site. Mm. So if this is for a holiday home, you need to find a nice holiday site, which is why you're buying it in the first place. Then you have your annual fees, which can be, you know, minimum I found is about 1800. Obviously that's water and electricity and gas and you know, landscaping and all that around the place. You do have to be careful as well though around access, because you might think that you would love to go on your holidays in the middle of February when it's lash and rain, because that's the time of year that you like your holidays. But some of them are only open for the summer months. So just, you know, keep an eye on what you're paying for and make sure that that all of that is in
place. So whether it's a kind of a towed caravan or a mobile home or your van, your car, what kind of aesthetic are we allowed work with? And what can you do with the inside?
Yeah, you can do loads with the inside. Now, I have a very strong personal preference on the aesthetic of camper vans and mobile homes. I love retro. I just think it's the perfect little experimental box for you to go mad with your retro theme. And you know,
are you talking about country cottage retro?
I'm more talking about kind of mid-century. Like my absolute dream, if I had all the space and all the money in the world, would be one of those Airstreams. You know, the second I describe this, you will know what I'm talking about. This is the all silver, very rounded, kind of looks like a bullet, super retro, but very kind of futuristic and curved on the inside. And, you know,
it looks like a 1950s diner.
Yeah, it does. And people have turned them into 1950s diner, and it's the perfect thing for that. So I love that level of retro. I'm talking a little bit kitschy. I think that's really nice.
Okay.
But not everyone has the appetite for that level of retro. So I am also willing to accept kind of farmhouse style, you know, shaker style kitchen cabinets. I feel they're so cozy and I love leaning into that. Mm. Personal preference, I'm not mad about the super modern, you know, super bright white everywhere.
The formica, the kind of shiny walls. All right.
I like it.
Now, like, to what extent can you decorate your mobile home or caravan? Because it does strike me they are made in such a particular way that a lot of stuff just comes completely pre-fitted, and to undo that would kind of be pointless.
Yeah, and you're right, especially if you do have a really well-designed one where there's built-in furniture and all that kind of stuff, then you probably don't want to go messing with that too much. That said, of course, you can go hard at the upholstery. So if you don't love the upholstery, if you want your own aesthetic on it, you can replace that. If you're handy yourself, go for it, but I would recommend getting a professional in. You're right, because the walls of a mobile home are thin. They're not studded walls like we're used to at home. So you're not really that open to hanging shelves or putting up, you know,
pictures,
big, heavy.
Okay.
Yeah. So light things are great. If you want to have shelves or something that is upright, then it's better to get something that is quite sturdy and stable and then use an adhesive to fix that to
okay.
the wall.
Okay.
So light shelves or light picture frames are fine, and I would definitely go for command hooks or something like that.
Yeah.
Just don't bother.
You're not going to need the heavy. Kind of the Arnold Schwarzenegger drill for this now at all.
Please do not take an okay, Arnold Schwarzenegger drill okay. to your little footwell home.
What about painting or even wallpapering yeah. the walls? Is that possible?
Of course, yeah. Paint anything. So go for it. You know, just check what material the wall is and go to your local paint centre and take a picture if you can and say, this is what I have. What kind of primer do I need and what kind of paint will work well here? I love wallpapering mobile home walls, and I'll tell you why. Because it's quite a sturdy, if you look for a good, durable, sturdy wallpaper. Like, mobile homes are small, you're cramming your entire family in there, or your animals and your pets, and you're knocking surfboards around the place. You're going to scuff the walls because it's really small. So I think a really, really durable paint or a lovely durable wallpaper can be great. My absolute favourite, though,
yeah.
if I were to pick...
You're going to say glitter ball now. I'm ending the interview.
I don't know why you wouldn't put them everywhere in every situation, but it's panelling. I think wall panelling
right.
is so... perfect for mobile homes. You've got that real coziness. It's very sturdy. You can paint over it whatever colour you want. It's super, super easy to put in. You know, it's literally just you buy it in slats.
Because you're getting the beads,
yeah.
which are usually just a white deal. So you can stick those on and then paint over the whole lot. And immediately you've personalised it then.
And those vertical stripes that you get, you know,
yeah.
subtle
like
vertical
the main
stripes.
Kind of summer house look.
Yeah, and it's really good for a small space. It draws the eye up, it makes the room feel a little bit taller than it is, and they're perfect.
Good luck.
Love
good
them.
Luck.
Love
okay.
that.
Because whenever I've been in a mobile home, they have this bland kind they of do, beige cream walls. They're all the same, and it just struck me, isn't it a pity that they're not coloured or brightened up or yeah. or whatever? Okay,
so you can rip that off then. You know,
so
no
you can paint, you can
off.
Panel, and you can wallpaper.
Yeah.
Great.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's an immediate freshen up. Now, the other thing is curtains, because sometimes you see them and they're just blinds,
yeah.
you know, and other times they've this like little filmy, flimsy yeah. thing just to keep out, you know, if you're changing or whatever. But would you go more than that?
I feel so strongly about this. And I think even more than the walls or the colour, there's something about those little mobile home or caravan curtains, and sometimes they're on, you know, the little wire tracks.
Yeah, just to stop them floating out.
Yeah, and I just feel that that is, swapping that out for really nice curtains, heavy curtains, beautiful fabrics is the most instant uplift you can give.
Right.
I just find that look is too flimsy looking and temporary looking, and it's not for me. It doesn't give me that cozy feeling. So I would, if you have the space, I would immediately swap that out for full length, really nice fabric curtains.
Full length?
I would go full length. I would go floor to ceiling if you have the space for it,
wow.
if there's nothing underneath it. Because nothing gives you luxury and comfort like floor to ceiling curtains. Even if the window is really small, I would still do it. I will die on this hill. I think it would make an immediate
now,
difference.
Now, of course, sometimes the windows, you might have your kind of sofa come bed
yeah.
right underneath there. So
what I would do in that instance, if you don't have the space for full length curtains, is I would go with blinds, and I would go with within frame blinds, but really nice ones. So either the lovely, you know, Venetian, kind of wooden Venetian blinds, or you can go for like a Roman blind or a roller blind. I love
okay.
Roman blinds. They're my favourite. In a lovely, lovely fabric, you know, just inside the window frame or just outside it. And if you are doing curtains or you are doing blinds, just privacy is more of a factor, I would say, in mobile homes than in houses, because you're going to be overlooked by the person who's, you know, whose sight is 2 or 3 metres down from yours. So have a layer of voile or some type of
netting or something. Netting, we used to call that in my
netting.
Day. Voile.
But that's what I'd splash out
right.
on. Of all
okay.
the expenses in a mobile home, I would splash
okay.
out on that one.
And actually, you might have to get those custom made, especially those little Roman blinds,
yeah.
because the mobile home windows are, but you're saying it's worth it.
Yeah, go down to the fabric outlet in County Kildare
okay.
and pick out your fabric. And you're, yeah.
Brilliant. Now, when you get into then the kitchen. Okay, so we know not to nail up shelving, but you can do quite a lot with the countertops and like things like the backsplash. Can you put up tiles
you can
in a mobile
put up
home?
Tiles, no problem. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I would, because sometimes again you get this kind of flimsy, temporary, you know, isn't this cute? We're all using plastic, kind of mobile homey
yeah.
type of
perspex.
Of
and,
yeah,
yeah.
It's not for me. I would go in with the tiles in the backsplash. Why not? And bring them all the way up, because that just looks so nice. And go with like a small repeating pattern. So like that, those metro tiles or a herringbone pattern or something like that, that's kind of small and repeating, will really give a lot of depth to it. And the second thing I would do, if there's already kitchen cabinets overhead, listen, the world knows how I feel about overhead kitchen cabinets, but especially in a tiny space like a mobile home, if one person leaves them open, you have a head injury. So, yeah, you know, listeners, I'm looking out for your safety here.
What are you suggesting?
I would take the doors off it if you can. See what the inside looks like.
And you want to be non-mobile now too, Josh. You can't be carting the caravan behind your car and all the open shelving.
Please don't do this. If you're in a moving van.
So take it off and paint up the...
Yeah.
And keep it as open.
And I would have a pattern up in behind the shelves. Oh. So that could be wallpaper, that could be your tiles extended upwards in behind the shelves, and or a colour, a different colour. And I would have open shelving up there.
And that gives you a depth you have. Then, doesn't it? Okay. Yeah. And no head injuries, as you say. Fantastic. Yeah. All right. That's amazing. Now, lighting is going to be key here, because usually in a mobile home, all you get is the little pin lighting, the high, harsh lighting up in the ceiling.
And what is it? It's like... Every builder in Ireland, for some reason, in houses and mobile homes, the answer to lighting is just 48 spotlights in the ceiling. And no, sometimes you need them, usually you don't. So sometimes, you know, for task lighting, they're really helpful. So leave them on in the kitchen, that's fine. But swap them out if you can for warmer bulbs, especially in the living area.
Good idea.
So yeah. This is kind of...
The ivory, the creams, yeah, that kind of look.
And you can get them in LED colours. So just look, it'll show you, it'll say warm lighting. So swap them out if you have the overhead lights. Bring in some lamps. Lamps are amazing. And what I would do if you, you know, you might not have control over where the plugs are or where the switches are in your fitted out mobile home. So invest in a battery powered or rechargeable smart lamp that you can turn off from a central source like your phone or, you know, Alexa or Google Home or whatever enabled one. Is really handy because you don't want to climb over your small living room that has lots of obstacles and tripping over yourself to turn off the lamp.
Idea. Yeah. So you could have a lamp. So I suppose at that rate, then you could nearly have a sconce. Or
you could. You know, you can get sconces that you just stick onto the wall. Obviously, not a heavy one, so don't get like a, you know, a stone.
Yeah,
one
antique. You know, yeah. Filigree, cast iron. Okay, no,
make
we're not
sure
going to do that.
You can drop it. Okay. Try dropping it, and if it's okay, then you can stick it on the wall.
Oh, yeah. That's fantastic! All right, and bathrooms. Then I suppose you can go full tilt. I mean, these are tiny bathrooms, like bathrooms in that you'd find in an aeroplane.
Yeah,
but that's no reason not to have colour and. Put up a nice mirror and, you know, invest in a bit of bling.
Yeah, like yourself, like your own little lovely downstairs bathroom where you've done your tile decals.
So tile decals
I'll
tell you what, I am converted. Yeah. The decals are the way to go and you're not, no weight.
No weight.
Because it's sticky tiles.
Yeah.
And if they're done properly, they're fabulous.
So
all
those
right.
are great. And the storage is usually just sorted in the bathroom. They're designed really, really well.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing I find is in the shower. So it's good to get, you know, maybe a little overhanging basket or something like that.
Yeah, that'll sure. And you can put things. Bottle. All right. Listen, that's fantastic. Fantastic ideas there. Now, you are going to add, I know you've done all this on your Instagram account, which is at Workers Cottage, but you might throw up another picture of your van for us, for
and
our listeners.
I'm going to hit the road soon. Myself and my little dog, Perry.
Fantastic. So, yeah, all right. We keep an eye on that. Okay. Jennifer Sheehan, thank you for joining us again in studio. And that's all we have time for on this episode of the Home Show podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and our mix of guests. And of course, at any time if you'd like to get involved or you want to suggest a guest or a topic for us, we would love to hear from you. It's thehomeshow@newstalk.com. That's the email. And of course, you can find me over on Instagram or X at SineadRyan100. My thanks to Aidan McKelvey, who produced this week. Researcher was Rory Galvin and Stephen McLoon was on sound. We'll see you all next time for the Home Show pod.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
Saturday morning at 8. On News Talk.